So, a very important question in entomology and evolutionary biology is how do plant defenses affect the interactions between herbivorous insects and their natural enemies? A very important interaction is how is the herbivore suitable as a host for the natural enemy? And a very good way to look at suitability is palatability. Often, or I shouldn't say often, always, it is in the herbivore's best interest to not be palatable for a natural enemy. So a way that we see that an herbivore cannot be palatable is to sequester secondary compounds. Secondary compounds can be stored in all different life stages of herbivores. They can be synthesized de novo by the herbivore, or they can be stored after being ingested from a plant. And so they're stored in different tissues. They're stored in quite a lot of different herbivore species. So they'll be in things like this harlequin stink bug. They'll be in different life stages like adults and larvae of Lepidoptera, so like this Baltimore checker spot sequesters out its entire life, whereas this sphingid, the Catalpa sphinx, only sequesters as a larva. And something that you see in a lot of these species is that they have warning coloration. And often, even when the herbivore uses secondary compounds that they acquire from the plant, you find that the chemical profile in the herbivore differs than that in the plant. So the objectives of this study I'll talk about today is what influences the concentration of these compounds in the herbivore. And I'll look at two different factors that could influence this concentration. First of all, the specialization of the herbivore. So it's kind of a commonly held belief that sequestration has evolved in specialists that are able to tolerate and use plant chemical defenses for their defense. So I'll compare specialists and generalist herbivores. And also, I'll feed these herbivores different diets. The diets will vary in the not only the concentrations of these secondary compounds, but also the secondary compounds that are present. The species that we work with is, the group of secondary compounds that we work with is the iridoid glycosides. These really make nice models for a lot of plant-herbivore interactions. For generalist herbivores, iridoid glycosides function primarily as antifeedants. Although once they have been consumed, they also have some physiological and pharmacological effects on herbivores. But we see that a lot of herbivores that can consume iridoid glycoside-containing plants use these as their own defense. So they're sequestered by at least four different herbivores, both chewing insects as well as insects with sucking mouthparts. The plants that produce these iridoids that I'll talk about are two different species of Plantago. One species of Plantago, Plantago major, the broadleaf plantain, its major iridoid glycoside is ocubin, and it produces a relatively low proportion of ocubin. So between 0.2 and 1% of the leaf dry mass is ocubin. The other plant that I'll be feeding these caterpillars is Plantago lanceolata. Plantago lanceolata contains not only ocubin, but also its derivative, catalpol. You'll see they differ right there. That epoxide group. And it also contains higher concentrations, Plantago lanceolata contains higher concentrations of both of these iridoid glycosides. Now I'll describe the herbivores. The first herbivore is kind of a classic specialist aposematic herbivore. It's Junonia senia, more commonly known as the common buckeye. It's an invalid butterfly. Its larvae feed only on plants from families that contain iridoid glycosides. In fact, it uses ocubin and catalpol in its host plants as not only feeding stimulants, also oviposition stimulants. They have kind of the classic feeding ecology of sequestering species. They feed exposed, they feed gregariously, and they don't really move. So they kind of sit in big groups on the leaves until the leaves are gone. Alternately, the generalist Arctiids that I'll be talking about have a very different feeding ecology. The first Arctiid is Phylosoma congrua, the congruent tiger moth. This consumes members of at least five different plant families, and included in its host range is Plantago, which remember contains the iridoid glycosides ocubin and catalpol. And like a lot of generalist caterpillars, it's really cryptic. So they hide underneath leaves, kind of move from leaf to leaf. They hide out, do a lot of feeding and moving nocturnally. It's to mean the Acria, another generalist archaeid, is even more prolificus. So it consumes over 24 plant families, and including its host range are at least two families that produce iridoid glycosides. And this is a very well-studied insect, more well-known for its sequestration of alkaloids, and it's also an economic pest. So the study I did was to really feed these larvae different combinations of the two Plantago species. So the first treatment was to feed these larvae only Plantago major, so they're only feeding on plant with a low concentration of occupant. The second treatment was to feed them through the first three instars. Let's feed them through the first three instars Plantago major, and then in their fourth instar, feed all three species Plantago lanceolata. So this means when they got older, their diet changed to a plant species with more iridoid glycosides. The next treatment is feed them Plantago lanceolata through their first three instars, then move them to a plant with lower concentrations. And we did this with we changed them at the beginning, the first day of the fourth instar before they fed. Fourth treatment was only Plantago lanceolata. All the larvae were frozen immediately upon reaching their fifth instar. And the reason we did this is because buckeyes start excreting and breaking down iridoids in their body as they begin to get closer to pupating. And then just to collect data, we weighed the caterpillars, we ground them up, and we ran them in gas chromatography. Occupant catopole are not volatile, but they can be derivatized to a form that makes them more volatile. So they can be run in gas chromatography. It's a very nice technique. We were able to quantify occupant that's present in the caterpillars. We were able to quantify catalpole that's present in the caterpillars. Then we were also able to combine them. We used a separate set of caterpillars to obtain a dry weight conversion. We converted their fresh weights to dry weights. And then we were able to calculate the percentage of a caterpillar's dry mass that was each of these two iridoids and then also the combined iridoids. And these were compared among three different species and the four different diets. First of all, we'll look at the generalist Escamini acria. The first thing you'll notice on this with this species is that they did a very poor job sequestering catalpole. So when they're fed Plantago major only, it does not contain catalpole, so their bodies contain none. But when they're fed Plantago lanceolata, which does contain catalpole for the first three instars, they still did not contain any catalpole. And then they contain a pretty low concentration. So the proportion of occupant to catalpole was still over 90% occupant. And so just to orient you the way I have all my slides, I have all stacked graphs so we can see the relative proportion of the two iridoids. And then this, I'll be comparing the total amount of iridoids with these post hoc tests. And then the Y variable will always be proportion of the iridoids. But we see a really different picture the Spirosoma congrua. We see that it really sequesters a lot of catalpole compared to the other generalists. And it sequesters about roughly equal amounts of occupant and catalpole. And the interesting thing is, with this species, you see the amount of occupant that it sequesters really doesn't vary no matter which of these diets it feeds on. And the amount of occupant can really vary between these plants. It's about threefold greater occupant in Plantago lanceolata leaves than Plantago major. We see a really nice relationship here. Basically, as we feed them a diet that's higher in iridoids, they contain more. And to look at the buckeyes, we see that they contain about equal amounts of iridoids when fed Plantago major later in life. And then to feed Plantago lanceolata later in life and also throughout life, they contain more iridoids. We see there's a really nice, consistent amount, proportion of catalpole in any of these sea diets, another fed catalpole. Then just to compare the three species together, these bars are only total iridoids. These are a combination of occupant and catalpole that they sequester. You see that no matter what the diet is, the genonia, the specialist, contains roughly double the total iridoids that the generalists do. And the difference between these two generalists is mainly due to the difference in the amount of catalpole. They sequester roughly equal amounts of occupant. And these are the averages of among all of the treatments combined of total iridoids. So in conclusion, we see that among, especially between the generalists and specialists, you see a big difference in the concentrations of sequestered aerodiglycosides in these lepidopterans, and really varies between all three species. I think it's really interesting in these two specialists, in one of the two iridoids, they have almost an identical amount that they sequester. But catalpole, the more derived iridoid, that really is very different between the two generalists. One species basically can barely sequester it, the other species sequesters it quite a bit. So for future directions, we can ask, why does the proportion of catalpole differ among these herbivores? So we can look at things like, how is it transported from the gut to the hemisphere? What's the biochemistry? And also, can these herbivores metabolize these and break them down? And the most ecologically relevant question, of course, is how do these different concentrations of iridoglycosides affect the feeding preferences of natural enemies? And that's another thing we can look at. So this work was funded by this NSF grant to my supervisor, Dean Bowers, and her collaborator, Lee Dyer. We received our RTs from her friends, Dave Wagner and Mike Singer. Thank you.
Time for fishes.
Okay, Angela?
Do you think that if you change the concentrations of the iridoids that they're feeding on, that it'll follow the same pattern? Like, will it still assume, will it still sequester at the same amount, or do you think it'll increase?
Yeah, are you thinking more like an artificially manipulated iridoid concentration?
Yeah.
Well, we're still waiting to see that, so it's something we won't know. My guess is that the proportion will probably be, because of the manipulations they're going to do will be done with the same proportions on the plant, we'll probably see the same relationships. Although because we can manipulate the amount, we can probably manipulate the total iridoids, but not really the proportion. Okay? No, if they're fed diets that don't contain the iridoglycosides, they don't sequester them. So all their sequestration is due to the iridoids that they consume. They can't